Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, how are you doing today?
Good morning, sir. I am doing well. Looking forward to getting the entire Business Radio X family together this evening. We've got our quarterly mixer, so that's going to be fun.
That's right. Big crowd at the concourse, as usual.
Well, this is going to be a fantastic segment. Today, we have with us in the studio a gentleman with Creative Growth Group and author. He has a book out now called The Opening Playbook, A Professional Guide to Building Relationships That Grow Revenue. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Andrew Dietz. How you doing, man?
All right. Thanks for having me.
The Opening Playbook, what compelled you to write a book?
Well, you know, before we get into that, I think we've talked enough, and let's just get down to business here. I have some marketing consulting services, and you guys probably need that. How about you have your checkbook with you?
Well, I have a credit card. Do you have a swiper? Can I just swipe my credit card?
I do. And you know, the other thing I'd like is, I tell you what, you give me three leads, and I'll give you three leads. So since I've already, you know, proven that I can do a good job for you, how about that?
That sounds good.
This is why I wrote the book.
Because that's actually happening out there, isn't it?
I've been on the receiving end of that too often.
So now, your work with professional service firms has kind of been the background that led you to this?
Yeah, B2B services and professional services firms. And if traditional salespeople have a hard time knowing how to behave when they're under the gun to generate revenue for their organizations, professional advisors, lawyers, accountants, consultants, architects, engineers, et cetera, they have it even harder because, you know, I didn't go to Harvard Business School to be a salesman, you know.
Now, has that changed? Like in the past, was the accountant's job just accounting, and then now their job is to be a salesman and an accountant?
It's certainly increased in that direction significantly. If you can't find a way to, attract and grow client relationships, you're probably not going to make partner. You're probably not going to stay a partner in your organization. And so careers now depend on it.
Now, are the firms proactive in helping their potential partners be good salespeople?
You know, they do some check the box kind of stuff. In other words, hey, I tell you what, we're going to invest in you. Here's a half an hour of sales training. Now go do it. If they even do that.
So some don't even do that?
Some don't even do that. And, it's still – and we're facing a generational difference here too, a generational gap. The senior partners at many firms, the leaders at many firms right now still are baby boomer generation. And often they didn't have to do business development. It came in. They inherited a book of business or something like that. And beyond that, they were just sort of trained and brought up to think differently about how or whether business relationships get built, how long it takes, what the expectations should be. Now we have millennials entering the workforce in droves, and they're used to not an eat what you kill kind of mentality, but a collaborate and win together mentality. And of course, they're equipped differently from a technology standpoint and everything else. So even if the senior partners wanted to really impart their wisdom about business development, assuming they have it,
they should just text it to them.
They should just text it. That's it. Have you heard about Yo, by the way? Yo is a one-word thing now, right?
Right.
Yo. I think that's too much. That's overkill to me. I think it's
just why?
No, No, just one digit. One digit. So I'm starting. I want to announce right here. You guys have an exclusive. I'm starting zero. That's the new thing. It's just one or zero. That's how we'll communicate.
But is that a challenge for firms? Like you said, they're baby boomers. Maybe they were more high touch relationship. You know, taking them to play golf, to go to the ball game. And you have the millennials who would rather, tweet you a note or text you a message, and it's less, you know, they're less likely to pick up the phone and call someone or meet them face to face?
Well, those definitely are differences that are real in the mode of communication, but it's the substance of communication that I think is actually in the millennials' favor. Traditionally, not that the average professional, baby boomer level, Gen X professional doesn't have substance to bring. They don't just, however, they don't often market that way. Mm-hmm. Not particularly effectively. Thought leadership has been, hey, let's write an article, throw it over the wall, and hope somebody calls us. Millennials, those who are really steeped in, communication through current technologies, are steeped in content marketing. What does it mean to create something of substance for someone else in a way that is, speaking of Yo or Twitter, is bite-sized and accessible? And influential at the same time. So much is different that I decided to write the opening playbook really for the next generation of business developers. It's a tool that, senior partners at major firms, chief learning officers steeped in the old way, let's go hire Miller Hyman, or let's just give them a course at Franklin Covey, or let's just, tell them to, hey, go figure it out. This is a tool that and a framework that allows them to engage their next generation in a way that lets that group more quickly move down the business development learning curve, bring revenue in more successfully. It's really selling without selling. Mm-hmm. This is, the focus has been generally, again, sort of time frame wise, we think of, if you were of this generation, Glengarry, Glenn Ross.
Yeah, if you had the Glengarry leads, all will be well.
Exactly. This famous Alec Baldwin scene where he is, this brutal sort of sales leader, coffee's for closers, what are you doing?
Right.
And ABC, always be closing, right? So this idea of closing is sort of old generation. It's not that we don't want to bring a business relationship or extend it to a commercial relationship, from a friendly relationship to a commercial relationship. In other words, actually win an engagement and begin working and getting money. Of course we want that. The challenge is people think that should happen immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like our opening to this,
right?
And as a result, what gets closed is the door on your foot. So, I'm going to keep you around, Stone. You're a good audience.
That's my job, laugh at the guest jokes. So I got to ask, in structuring the book, you have this consistent theme of a football game. What compelled you to go with that treatment, I think the instructional designer author types call it?
Finding a way that's relatable to communicate. Any time you look at, let's go back to Hollywood. Hollywood, people say there are like 7 stories, 12 stories, the same number of stories that can be told.
Right.
Well, if that were true, we'd have 7 to 12 movies and that would be it. But we don't. We have a multitude, just like we have a multitude of business development, sales books, et cetera. What I've tried to do is tell the story in a way, first of all, I do think I'm emphasizing a point that hasn't really been emphasized, which is, especially in advisory relationships, we have to focus more on opening the relationship, keeping it open, staying open ourselves. And if we do those things right, then we're positioned to have the client close themselves, frankly, or just extend the relationship.
But in that kind of situation where you're being open and you're creating this kind of consultative opportunity, how do you manage the timeline? Like at one point, you're being generous and you're helping and you're doing all this stuff, but at some point it has to turn into money at some point, or you can't help them more.
At some point you got to bite them in the neck, Lee says.
Yeah.
Right? Is that true?
I don't know, but there is a reason.
What chapter is that?
There is a reason I'm wearing a turtleneck today here. Let me answer your question, Lee, and then I want to go back to the framework of a coach and a team. It's a paradox We have to, as advisors, act with a sense of urgency and also recognize that if we act out of desperation too urgently, then we lose trust. And trust is our coin of the realm in advisory services. So, you know, and we invest in a relationship, and the truth is it may not pay off for a while. Meanwhile, does that mean it's not a useful asset? No. But, you know, we do have to reprioritize again and again. So the other balancing act is between focus on any one particular relationship and focus on a portfolio of relationships. And so, you know, I talk about this formula of, you know, more of the right conversations with more of the right connections and more of the right with more of the right context, you know, more often and you know, in a way that reflects your brand appropriately. And so how do you do that? So any one relationship needs to be taken through that process, but it's the portfolio of relationships and making sure there are enough of those types of relationships going on at any given point in time that there's always something dropping into, you know, the paid zone. That's the challenge. Not rushing any single relationship, having enough going on and nurturing them all. So, and again, tough balance when you're also trying to manage your practice.
So, Lee, you know what I always do when we have authors in the studio? I do the thumb test. And for me, if you can just take your thumb and just thumb through the book real quick and just land on any page and on one page or the other find something of value, then you probably got a good book. And if you could do it two or three times in a row, you definitely have one. I've been doing that while you guys have been talking. But every time I come to a page, there's genuine, solid counsel and guidance that it just makes sense. And like, so I'm on my last thumb. I mean, 18 pages in, and it doesn't take near that long to find something of value. Open other possible options beyond yes or no. Along this whole theme of always be opening, right? Instead of always be closed. Can you speak a little bit more to that?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about that one because it has to do with a mindset, a way of thinking, a creative problem-solving lateral thinking approach. Now, most of the professionals I deal with are really good problem solvers. That's what makes them good advisors. But they tend to think limit their thinking. In other words, close their thinking off rather than open it. Close it off to believe that the only way they can really apply that problem solving effectively is to the unique professional discipline they have. Well, you know, they can take that ability to think in what I would call a how else mentality and apply it to business development. How else could I get this done? How else could this conversation go besides yes or no? And the more that a professional can play that game and train themselves to think that way by themselves as well as along with their client in real time, the more success they have, the more they open themselves up to good things happening.
Now, can you share maybe an example? Like say you're working with a lawyer who doesn't like sales or doesn't consider themselves a salesperson. What are some things that they could do to help them, you know, begin this kind of change in their thinking? To be opening more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's an increment. You know, focusing on incremental progress and steps along the path. Let's just take attorneys as an example. If you're a good attorney at a reasonable law firm, you probably have a darn good education and you work really hard to get there.
Right.
And you are an achievement oriented person. They don't like to fail. They often see the problem as a big problem. Gosh, I have to bring in $1 million in revenue.
So now, is that typical what happens? So an attorney joins a firm or is recruited to be part of a firm, and then they have some – at some point they're going to be told, look, yeah, you need to generate X number of dollars.
Right. You know, this still happens in just about every profession I see. You get hired – earlier in your career for technical expertise and competence,
right,
and your ability as an individual contributor. And then somewhere in there, 5 to 10 years in, somebody says, you know, if you want to rise in this organization, right, you better figure out how to generate revenue. Most often, That conversation is had like maybe about 3 months before the partnership decision is made. It's insane.
It's probably a coincidence.
Yeah. I'd like to see that conversation be included in the education of the professionals in, you know, college or graduate school, honestly.
So this blindsides some people.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And even if they know it's coming intellectual or, you know, they know it's coming, when it hits them, they go, oh, what the heck am I supposed to do? They're, you know, they are deer in headlights. So, and that's our friend in the book, Sam, who has exactly that experience.
So the first thing is buy the book. That's what the first move you should make, right?
That's the first, exactly. Number one, buy the book. Okay, number two.
So now what is he doing?
Buy it for friends.
As a way to meet more people, right?
Yeah. But, you know, let me, I just want to go back to this idea of, you know, of how I wrote the book and the approach, the treatment, if you will. My hope was to find an opening space, white space, a place where competitors aren't playing for myself. And that's exactly what I ask my readers to do. Number one, you have to have a strategy. You have to spend a little bit of time thinking before doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so strategy before tactics. For me, thinking about this book, I had to figure out a way to differentiate this book. And, you know, I've written a book before. It was a narrative nonfiction book, you know, really the story of something. And so I like to write that way. But I also know that my readers and this audience of professionals are practical and they want answers right now.
Right.
So I created a hybrid. I think this may be the first book that has done this, a hybrid of a business parable and a how-to guide. And the way I figured out to put that together was to create the framework of a coach watching game film with his or her team. Let's see what happened there. All right, let's watch this. But we don't watch the whole film and then talk about it. We watch it. We watch a portion. We say, let's stop right there. What happened? How could we do that differently?
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, that treatment stone was an effort on my behalf to position this book differently. And the voice of the coach, right? So every chapter is either a role game film and let's watch what happens to Sam and Candace and this group of people struggling with this business development issue together, a group of millennials, really. And that's interspersed with my voice as the coach saying, okay, what happened there? How can we do that differently? What lessons did we learn? All right, let's go on. You know, I'm sure right now the coach of the U.S. soccer team, you know, is with his or her, you know, teammates right now. Well, his. What am I saying? He's with the teammates right now, and they're, you know, they're talking about what do we need to do? Let's remember the fundamentals. Let's get back. So that's the role I often play with clients in real life, and I was trying to demonstrate that in this book.
Well, you guys kind of went back and forth tongue-in-cheek about buy the book and buy it for your friends and all that. But all kidding aside, if I'm seeing your name partner at Dewey, Cheatham & Howe, there may be some wisdom in getting a box of books and somehow incorporating this into our in-house professional development curriculum. Yes, is that accurate?
Absolutely. And you can do that on your own, or you can bring me along with it.
Well, I want to talk about that too, because I think both paths probably have some merit, and they're probably not mutually exclusive. If you would speak to the work a little bit, when a law firm, an accountancy, engages you, walk us through that engagement, Matt. Can you just talk a little bit about the work, how that starts and unfolds?
Yeah, thank you. There are really. I think this is true of any business now, right? Where marketing and sales are coming together. They need to, right? It's a waste of money to hold marketing on one side of the building and your business development or sales efforts on another, and they don't coordinate. That's just inefficient. But it's especially true in advisory services, professional services, where the professionals are the product. So marketing and sales naturally go together. You're the walking embodiment of the brand as an attorney or accountant or consultant, but you're also the deliverer of services. So a bit different. So where I typically start is understanding what people are famous for, what an organization is famous for, what makes them different or better than anybody else. What's the open space, the white space in the market, the blue ocean strategy, where the sharks aren't. And if you don't know what that is, then I step you through how to create that, and that's in the book as well. But we start with that, and while that kind of that essence, what comes out of that is who are you, what do you do, why should anybody care? While that's useful for marketing, communications, and messaging, I'm interested in it with my clients to help inform their prospect list. Many professional service firms that I deal with, when I first meet them and I ask who's at the top of your wish list, they go,
really?
I don't know that company. I know yo, but I don't know it's all opportunistic. Well, I don't know. I just people know me and they send stuff my way. Okay. So
you're trying to systematize it.
Yeah, so I'm trying to systematize
predictable and replicatable, right?
There you go. So we start with positioning. Who are you? What do you do? Why should anybody care? We move to prospects and pursuit plans. So let's come up with not only a marketing business development strategy for our organization, but on an account-specific basis as well for those that really matter most, prioritizing and then pursuit planning. So that's sort of aiming. I help firms and practice groups aim.
And once they define their strategy and where their white space is going to be, that becomes fairly simple at that point, right?
Exactly. That is really the once we have that, the rest for me anyway is
it just falls into place organically.
It does. So much comes from that, and I can give you some examples. But let me tie it together. Though the other things we do are help arm or equip those organizations with systems and skills. So that's training, coaching. We have a methodology that combines training, coaching with individuals and groups, again, both together and individually, because the way we go to market in professional firms is as individuals, and we shouldn't be in a firm if we're not collaborating with our partners on behalf of our clients. So it mixes all of those together to deliver a more effective result. And then the third thing that we're increasingly asked to do is help act, help do. Even those professionals who know what they're doing and know how to do it, don't do it when it comes to business development. Why not? Well, because it's not like working in, Acme Incorporated. That's the Roadrunners company, by the way, or the Coyote. Anyway, Acme Incorporated. But it's not like working in a regular big company where you have your own function. You have to bring it in. You bring the work in. You have to execute the work. You have to manage the team. You have to help grow the firm. You're juggling so much and at the whim of the client that it's very hard, so you need leverage, and we're asked to help provide leverage. Usually that's in terms of creating content marketing platforms that help our professionals sell without selling. Sometimes that's directly just give me the ball, we're gonna be your BD arm. We also have an alliance program that does some other marketing communications work, PR and web. As a good marketer, we always have to have alliteration. So aim, arm, and act. Those are the three things we get hired for.
Well, and you guys work with some of the more well-respected professional service firms on the planet. And so you have to eat your own cooking. All these things that you're out here telling folks to do that you've committed to the pages of this book, you guys have to live it every day to market your own services, right?
That's exactly right. If we're not doing it, we don't have any business. And constantly about our own positioning, we focus on reach of our list right now. Not only from an organization standpoint, but the individuals in those organizations. Where can we find affinity? Things that we have in common with those individuals, business, personal, professional. We're certainly trying to think about answer to the question, right, what's right? Who are the right connections? What are the right conversations? Conversations are the result of good content. By the way, speaking of opening one's mind, our definition of content, or my definition of content, is more than just, hey, here's a white paper, why don't you download it? content is anything of value to the other person you're trying to build a relationship with. Content could be thought leadership in written form. It could be being on a radio program or having your own radio program like you help people develop. It could be creating an event. It could be any of those kinds of things, but it also could be a question that benefits the other person. It could be an idea or an insight. Hey, you know, I was thinking about this. Would this be helpful to you? It could be an introduction. Lee, you know, I know you're doing, and Stone, you're doing a lot of work in online radio, social media. I wonder if you know such and such, because they're doing some common things and you can help each other. And of course, it could be flat out income. Hey, here's a piece of business. So content is much more than a white paper. And so we have to create our own content as creative growth and in teaching others. So one way we do that is through an annual awards program that we created called the Client Advisor Awards. The Opening Playbook is another example. And we have a blog, growingprofessionalservices.com. You can also get there through openingplaybook.com, where we're, you know, posting on a daily basis ideas, observations, anything that could be of value. And then context. What's the context in which we're being seen? How often are we being seen? That's the tough one. That really is the tough one. How do we position ourselves? How do we show ourselves in a way that makes us attractive? And yeah, I know that's a softball, Lee, for you. We could probably have a lot of jokes.
Well,
hey, Andrew, there's no way. You know, you're just screwed, man.
Well, I'm hearing a lot of tactics to create inbound opportunities. Mm-hmm. Is there ever a case where, like, a person should be cold calling someone, or are those days gone where you should be out there, you know, proactively trying to talk to a stranger?
Well, you know, the idea of a cold call is, you know, the way, you know, I tend to think of it as content free. It's just devoid of content. Therefore, it's all about me. And sometimes it's about you. What do you think of me? Right? That kind of thing.
Right.
You know, what are you going to buy from me? So, you know, that those days I hope are over, but people still do it. And frankly, some people, you know, have the tenacity, the time, the stupidity. I don't know what, but they just, you know, and you're going to stumble on something. So, you know, I wouldn't say never, but boy, that wouldn't be, you don't need to hire me to help you just kind of stumble on stuff.
But once you
good luck with that.
But like when your firms have identified their, you know, their strategy, this is the space I'm going to be in. I've identified these 100 dream clients.
Yeah.
So now I have to now start just creating content in order to engage with these dream lists. Is that the order of things?
Well, let me back up on that a bit. You know, we have the right positioning or strategy. Then we decide which companies are dream clients in terms of their appeal to us.
Right.
More important than that is, are we appealing to them?
Right.
And what is it about us that would be appealing to that particular client? So understanding that, and then understanding the individuals in those organizations and asking that same question. What would be appealing to me or to them about me? Is there something we have in common? Hey, you went to University of Michigan. I went to University of Michigan. You worked at Arthur Andersen. I worked at Arthur Andersen. You know, there could be any, you know, you're into photography. I'm into, who knows what? Sometimes they're personal, sometimes they're professional points of connection. But finding those. So understanding the information advantage you need, those kinds of, you know, what's happening in those organizations that's different, that's shifting, that might, you know, represent a trigger, an opportunity for you to help near term. You know, what success look like for them and how can you be bringing things that help them achieve that success to the table more frequently.
And that's an important component, is to look at it through the prism of what success looks like for them.
Of course. And them is, you know, that individual's career, that individual's personal situation, that individual and the organization that they're in. And so information and introductions, those are the things we need. We need advantaged information and advantaged introductions. An advantaged, a disadvantaged introduction is this. Hey, Stone, you ought to meet Lee. Lee does this radio thing. He'd like to sell you some radio time or some advertising or something like this, right? Or, hey, you know, you ought to talk to Andrew. He's a consultant. Oh, God, help me. No, thanks. I don't need any more of those today, you know? I already gave my watch to somebody else to tell me the time. So, you know, that's a disadvantage because the door slams shut. Now it's harder for me to get a conversation.
You'd have been better off on your own.
I would have been, right? So we have to have advantaged introductions. And so that's, you know, that's one of the – besides scouring the marketplace for information and understanding how to interpret that and link whatever's happening with that company or individual to something you can help them with, near term, longer term. And by the way, help them with doesn't mean they buy from me right now. It means just that. In fact, maybe even initially, it's better, you know, to go to the table and say, here's something that can help and don't worry about it. I'm just really looking to open the relationship and begin to demonstrate my value to you. The advantaged introductions are those that don't have a binary yes or no result. Yes, I'll talk to them. No, of course, we want yes. But even if it's that kind of flat introduction I mentioned earlier, somebody may just take the meeting just to get it off their plate or do a favor for a friend, but there's really nothing there. So it's our obligation to bring something of value every time to every conversation, including the first one, including, you know, the proverbial cold call, you know, not solicitation, you know, but real value.
And you're sincerely trying to help them and you think that this is a good fit and it might sincerely help them.
You know, if you don't have a genuine interest in the others, if you know, those that you're dealing with, if you aren't genuinely curious about their business and inquisitive about, you know, how you might help them, how they might be helped, whether it's by you or anybody else, you're going to have a challenge. As an advisor, as a professional advisor especially, I don't know about selling Oracle software or, you know, maybe you can get away with it or cars or something. But when you're selling your own advice and your own ability to be an advisor, a confidant, a thought partner, you have to demonstrate what it's like to work with you. And you know, people want to work with somebody that's authentic, that's genuinely curious, that's motivated to help them. You know, you need to be demonstrating that from the first encounter.
Well, and just like so much else in life, if you want to get advantaged introductions, you probably ought to make a discipline of providing advantaged introductions, not just willy-nilly, but when it makes sense. I mean, if you were on your game, Lee, we would have maybe had a person representing a law firm here that we respect and that we know might very well want some help, and we would put these folks together. We'd interview them. We'd provide value for them, and these two guys would get a chance to meet. That would have been a good advantage introduction.
That would have been good. You know, if you just told me, I could have played that role.
Could have just, in both. Well, I want to go back to before we wrap. I just want to give some real credence to this whole context content thing, because for me, it played itself out in how we got here today. I don't remember whether it was a LinkedIn note or some other news scraping thing that I have, or if I was just out looking for books. But somehow, some way, a couple weeks ago, I saw, oh, Andrew Dietz. I know Andrew. We've had him in the studio before. He just came out with a new book. So Lee and I need and want to have thought leaders in the studio. That is good for us. It allows us to fulfill our mission. So I saw that. And I saw it in the right context, so I was able to reach out. When I reached out, I was able to get what I needed and wanted, but it's also good for you to come on the radio and talk about your new book. So, I mean, am I making too many leaps here, or is that an illustration?
No, I think this specific situation and our friendship overall is indicative of that. There are, you know, and it's not something that I sit and count. All right, well, that's one for me, and one that's two for Lee and Stone. You know,
right?
And I know you don't do that either. And that
are
is
you
great.
Saying we should start counting?
I think so because I'm winning.
It's on page 77 here.
When do you start counting?
And you owe me some money. It's a wonderful relationship when things are like this, where it's business friendship. It's natural. It's easy when your business friend offers very high quality services, and you know the client's going to be happy every time.
Yeah,
it's a no brainer. So it's easy, and I was very appreciative of your reaching out. And that said, even though we hadn't, you know, connected in a little while, I'm sure some of the messages you saw were from my own outreach through online marketing and social media. And so as we talk about tactics in the book, you know, the kind of three buckets, one is, you know, deep relationship marketing, creating experiences. What's our experience being together today? This is a good example. Actually, what you do with your all the radio shows you do and how you create experiences, not only for the listener, but the experience for the people in the room is terrific. So what are those experiences we create that demonstrate what it's like to work with us? That's number one. Number two, but those are hard. Those are in-person conversations. How many of those can we have, right? And they take a lot of focus and prep, right? Finding that information advantage, you know, relationship advantage, all of creating great experience. Second thing are platforms. They give you a little more, you know, leverage. Client Advisor Awards is an example. A blog could be an example. You can still, if used appropriately, meaning not just as a throwaway branding activity, but as a way to engage others in meaningful conversations. That's business development. So those are helpful because, you know, you can create something once, reach many. But we still need more leverage, and that's where social media, that's where email marketing, that's where, you know, these other tools that are technology enabled come into play, and they're increasingly important. They'd never substitute for in-person relationship building, but, you know, you have thousands of contacts. I have thousands of contacts. We can't have lunch with everybody every week. We'd be 5,000 pounds, and we, you know, and you do the same thing. Your event tonight is a good example of your effort to cultivate your essentially your membership. I know you have listeners that are dedicated listeners. You have hosts that are dedicated fans and champions of yours and what you've put together. And you could just see them once a month or once a week or whatever, but you've created a special event to bring them together. That's content. You've just created something of value for all of those folks, and frankly, it benefits you too, and it's a great context. So, you know, you guys are good living examples.
Now, that...
that's what I was fishing for was the last
compliment.
Sentence.
That's good. Now...
sometimes it takes me about 10 or 15 minutes to get it out there, you know.
But the building community around the constituency you sell is kind of at the heart of this?
Yeah. You know, it's... you know, I think ideally, let me back up again. If I back up any further, I'll be on the other side of the wall. But I had somebody I used to work with who said, let me back up all the time. And that's what I would think. So let me go forward. I forgot what I was going to say.
It was something about community, right? About
Community.
Community
okay,
being
there we
key
go.
To, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the product companies that I see, know, and deal with, the marketers in those organizations wish that they could have more service components to what they do. In fact, they have to differentiate,
mm-hmm.
right? The movement from products to services to then experiences is, you know, kind of well documented. Jim Gilmore and Joe Pine, The Experience Economy, you know, a great book, long time approach. So products want to be services and experiences. Meanwhile, services companies are hiring client experience professionals. We're in Atlanta. Grant Thornton happens to have their national head of client experience here, right? So an accounting firm is trying to think about how do we orchestrate really superb client experiences. That said, service firms also want to productize. How do we get annuity revenue? How can I not just be, how can this not just be me and my billable time, right?
Right.
Services companies want to be product companies want to be services companies, and, you know, everything's coming in the middle. What meets in the middle is sort of a media membership model, where we have constituents and audiences that we have to cultivate. They benefit when we bring them together. Treating our clients like members, like, or our former clients like alumni, is a smart long-term relationship move that pays dividends. Many firms are particularly good at that as well. You know, I hate to, McKinsey doesn't need any bragging on them, but, you know, it's true. They're good at that. Arthur Andersen, though no longer in business, frankly, is still good at it. That's how strong they were.
Wow.
At building that bond of relationships, especially among the colleagues that work there, that, you know, I mean, I just still see incredible business deals being done through that diaspora of professionals.
Now, who drives this in the firm? Is it the CEO? Is it the who is the person who is the kind of the champion for this community building?
You know, it depends on the kind of firm, whether you're a partnership with an executive committee or whether you're a corporation and it's more hierarchical. But, you know, I wish it came from marketing and business development more often. It's not that those executives aren't capable, competent, or thinking this way. But when you're in a professional services firm especially, it's the experts that, you know, kind of have the hold the keys. And the experts that are running the business, the leaders, the managing partners, the CEOs, are, you know, it starts there. And
so it has to start there in order to be effective. Like, you can't just go, Bob is a superstar at doing this. You know, I wish more people could be like Bob.
Well, let me put it there. That would be nice. That does happen. Then everybody hates Bob. But
and Bob starts his own firm.
Yeah. So there's no question that an individual can do this on their own. And in many firms where there's no senior champion, that's the only way it's going to happen. So small groups of people, this is like innovation. Let's call this business development innovation. We can think of it as that. When I worked for a big corporation, the way innovation occurred was we had to have, you know, skunkworks. We had to have small groups of rebels. Who knew how to play, you know, be rebellious and, you know, without mom and dad knowing kind
right.
of thing, you know, until it was a success. And that can work in professional firms. It's the John Cotter has a more refined way of putting that, but, you know, it's sort of finding armies of, you know, cohorts of change agents and things like that. So it can happen. It can happen at an individual level, et cetera, but it happens best when it comes from bottom and top. That's where I'm most effective with my clients. If I'm working with, you know, not everybody, because not everybody's going to get this. I mean, there are some people in professional firms, let's face it, who are just going to, you just need, and they're great experts, so keep them.
Right.
But keep them in the back room, let them do their thing, right? They don't have to, we shouldn't expect more. They may be able to do something, but let's focus instead on that core group of high potential, you know, up and comers that get it. That have some natural DNA, and let's partner them with the senior leadership, you know, who's supportive of them, but also recognizes that the way these millennials go to market may not be the same way they did it, and that's okay. In fact, some blend of the two might be ideal.
So while Kevin looks up the word diaspora, why don't we let our I think it means something like boatload. I don't know, Kevin. That was the context clue I got. But let's let our listeners know where they can get their hands on this book.
Oh, yeah. So Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, any online book retailer, as well as, you know, there are still some retail stores out there, and they have them as well. Barnes & Noble has been a great supporter. And, in fact, I have a relationship with the Barnes & Noble Buckhead in Atlanta, where companies that want to you know, be part of their corporate program, which doesn't cost anything to join, you know, can get 20 to 25% discount on larger orders.
And that's a good strategy for some of these professional service firms is to buy it by the caseload, and you have a program to help them kind of implement it throughout their company.
Yes, we do. You know, we've got a set of offerings, I guess, for lack of a better term, productized offerings that we, you know, there's a framework that we also customize for every organization we deal with.
And how? What's the size order they have to place in order to take advantage of that?
I think it's 25 or more, but I have to go back and look. So that said, for any company that will buy 25 or more from, you know, a Nielsen book scan approved company, which means basically Barnes & Noble,
right?
You know, then I will provide a half an hour of my time coaching a group of their people. You know,
so they can get the most out of the book.
Correct. Let me help you activate it.
All right. And the website again for the book?
www.openingplaybook.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Guys, thank you very much.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and all of us here at Business Radio X. We will see you all next time.